Selam. Lola. Oh, Becca, how are you?
Hi, I'm here. I'm just getting dinner.
Hi.
But who said that?
Me, Lola.
Oh, shalom, Lola. Hey, Lola, are you you joined this class? You were
I was
no.
always in this class.
Oh, I mixed you up with Kayla again. Sorry.
Okay.
I apologize.
It's all good.
Okay. Leora is here. Debbie Teitelbaum. And Rachel is here. Admit all. Rachel, Dvorah Levi. Shalom, Debbie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. We missed you last week. Shalom, Rachel.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, Baruch Hashem. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, very good, very good. Tui Dvorah is here. Dvorah, do you hear us? Oh, here
Yeah,
is
I can hear
Dvorah.
you.
Shalom, Dvorah. How are you? You're on the move. You're doing some exercise. No.
No, I was sitting in my room for a while, so now I'm just switching spots.
Oh, that's good. Get your adrenaline running. I just took a shower myself. Here it's Davka, this is a normal hour, but I've been giving shiurim at 11 p.m., at 5 a.m. It's really difficult for the teachers. Okay, is anybody else? Oh, here is Molly. Shalom, Molly. Well, how are you? How was Mother's Day yesterday?
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah, good. You know what? I see you now. Then I forgot to put up the recording from yesterday's shiur. I'll send you Bezrat Hashem.
You.
Okay. By the way, as I mentioned last time, we have a couple of classes left, and I wanted to know if any of you have suggestions for questions that you'd like to deal with. Any open ends? This is the time to ask. You know, I'm around for Bezrat Hashem till 120. You can always ask me after, even after the year of Midrashah. But if anybody has anybody thought of topics that you'd like to discuss for next time? Not all together, one at a time. No questions? You know what? I'll give you till the end of the class. By the end of the class, you give me some, you'll have time to think of questions, okay? What our question for today is, how should we look at the reform movement? Most affiliated Jews in America are affiliated with the Reform movement, and a lot has been said, and also the approaches have changed a lot over the generations. I'll also point out that this really is clearly a question that somebody from America asked, because in Israel the Reform movement is basically non-existent. There's a famous story in the early 50s when they opened a Reform temple in Yerushalayim. And somebody said to David Ben Gurion, they said to him cynically, "No, now you have a shul that you can go to." To which David Ben-Gurion answered, if I ever decide to go to shul, I'll go to a real shul. And that's the approach that most Israelis have. You know, most Israelis, 80% of Israelis are either religious or traditional. And if you're traditional, so the whole idea is to go to a shul, which is traditional, right? The shul that you grew up in, the shul that your grandfather went in. That's why most Israelis also, even if they're not religious, they have chuppah and kiddushin. First of all, because that's the law of the land. I don't know if you people know that there's no way to officially get married in Israel without chuppah and kiddushin. If somebody, for example, wants to get married without a chuppah, or even, by the way, intermarriage, it's impossible to intermarry in Israel. Somebody who wants to marry a non-Jew has to fly to Cyprus in Greece and get married there and then come back married. So it's a totally different take. But we're going to talk about basically the American Reform Movement. There is a Reform Movement in England as well. It's not as strong as it is in America. The girls from England know that the official chief rabbi of England is always going to be Orthodox. That's it's actually there, right? Official, right, Debbie? Leora, who else is that's official law there. Anyway, what is the Reform Movement? Where did it begin, and where does it stand now? Until 1760, all Jews were Orthodox. There was like a Baruch Spinoza who decided 400 years ago he doesn't want to be religious, but he was a Yotze Min HaKlal. By the way, he also practiced, he davened Shachrit, Mincha, and Maariv, and put on tefillin every day. And then in 1760, came along a guy named Moshe Mendelssohn, you probably heard the name, and he came up with this idea that the time has come for the Jews to leave the ghetto. And he continued to be religious. The saying was, Heve Yehudi beveitecha uben adam betzeitecha. Be a Jew in your home, but be a person outside your home. And the idea was to look German, to act German, to speak German. And that's where the Reform Movement began, basically to leave the ghetto, but to stay religious. The problem was, within 50 years, there were hundreds of thousands of Jews who converted to be Catholic or Protestant. In other words, as soon as the Jews started leaving the ghetto with the Reform Movement, so they totally left. A very strong part of Judaism at the time was social. There was a positive peer pressure. If you were Jewish, you were religious. Even Mendelssohn himself, for example, all of his children converted to Christianity, except one. And his grandson, anybody ever hear of the composer Felix Mendelssohn? Nobody plays piano? Very famous composer, Felix Mendelssohn. His parents converted him when he was six. In other words, all of Mendelssohn's grandchildren died Christian. And we see where the Reform Movement really was leading. That was at that time. At that time, the question was, are you Orthodox or are you Reform? By the way, there was no conservative movement. Conservative movement really began in the beginning of the 20th century, where some Jews said, Orthodox, that's like too old-fashioned, but the Reform, they're like Christians. They don't do anything. And by the mid-20th century, most Jews in America were conservative because that was like the middle of the road. Today, you don't hear too much about the conservatives simply because those who were raised conservative, if they're serious, they eventually become Orthodox. Or they just go in the other direction. But Reform at the end of the 19th century, Reform was already very, very formidable. And the idea of the Reform Movement was that the time was for Judaism was to update Judaism. They had a lot of questions, just like we have in this class, questions in Emunah. And some of you may remember, you remember we had a class on what's the answer to most of the questions of certain mitzvot or halachot or minagim that seem to be outdated, that need to be updated, that don't make sense anymore. For example, Yikum Purkan, right? You all know Yikum Purkan that we say before Musaf on Shabbat? Yikum Purkan min Shemaya? You never heard of Yikum Purkan? You with me? Hello?
Rav Shvat, you're frozen for us.
I am frozen. But can you hear me the whole time?
I just switched my Wi-Fi, so it went out.
Okay. Bekitzur. Yikum Purkan min Shemaya, there's a tefillah that we say before Musaf, and it's in Aramaic, and it was originally written in Aramaic because that was the vernacular, that's what people in Bavel spoke. And in the tefillah, it is a prayer for the Roshei Yeshivot of Bavel, and the Jews of Bavel, and I don't know if you people know that there are no Jews in Bavel anymore. Where's Bavel? It's Iraq. So if there are no Jews in Bavel, why do we continue davening for the Jews in Bavel? So that's a good question. The real answer is tradition. That if we would make reforms and changes every time we had a question on Judaism, we wouldn't be around here anymore. And we don't want to throw away the baby with the bathtub water. And that is why, in general, Judaism, as all religions, does not like reform. We don't like changes. Do you remember we had a class? What is the solution when a halakha has to be updated? Does anybody remember? Do you people hear me? I don't see anybody anymore. Do you people hear me?
I can hear you
a little bit.
Okay.
Like cracky.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Quite cracky.
So, nothing I can do about that. But do you remember we had a shiur on restarting the Sanhedrin? Do you remember that? That is really the solution. That's exactly the job of the Sanhedrin, the Torah Shebaal Peh, is to update halachot. So if there ever is a halacha which seems out of date, theoretically, if the Sanhedrin decides that there's a problem with the bracha of Shelo Asani Isha, right? Or that's exactly the job of the Sanhedrin. But because we don't have a Sanhedrin, and Moses Mendelssohn, who was an intelligent person, he saw that we have to update Judaism. And what the original... Oh, now I see Dvorah. Dvorah, did you hear me the whole time?
It was a little choppy, but I got it, most of it.
Yeah, can you make most of it? I see Rebecca now. Rebecca, do you hear me the whole time? I see Rachel again. I see Molly.
I can hear you.
Sorry?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Most good. Of the time.
Baruch Hashem. Oh, now I see Lola. Shalom, Lola. The original Reformed temples in Germany, they were halachic. They had a speech. The chidushim was that they had a speech in German. They did not say the piyutim. They had quiet tefillot with a lot of decorum. And it was basically like going to a modern Orthodox shul in America today. That was the reform. And if you would go to a reformed temple in Germany in the late 1800s, I think all of you would feel at home. The problem was, little by little, as soon as you start making changes, that is exactly what Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. That's what he understood, right? You remember that? His first daughter gets married without a shidduch. And the second daughter marries a socialist. And the third daughter marries a goy. And as soon as you start making changes, you're down on the slippery slope and everything is going to change. Now, that's exactly what happened in Germany. Whereas in Germany, it was a very slow change. In the United States, it was a totally different story. The United States, the reform movement basically left everything. They totally abandoned just about all tradition. The first Reformed temple was in Charleston, North Carolina, in 1824. They changed the siddur. They didn't eat kosher. They removed the mechitza. Even mezuzah. Many of them stopped doing mezuzah. Basically, everybody did whatever they felt like or didn't feel like, right? That's what cognitive dissonance is. You do that which is comfortable, and most traditions are not comfortable. The major leader of the U.S. reform movement was a guy by the name of Isaac Wise, who lived from 1819 to 1900. And he realized that unless we toe the line and have one reform siddur and one reform ordination smicha program, everything, there's not going to be a religion if everybody does what they feel like. And he was very successful. And if you heard of the HUC, the Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, right? That was Isaac Wise. And by the end of the 19th century, almost 100% of the Jews in America are Reform. Very, very few Orthodox Jews at the end of the 19th century. When the Jews started coming from Europe before World War I, after World War I, before World War II, so that is when Orthodox Jews really began coming to America. The height of the Reform movement was in 1885, the Pittsburgh Platform. The Pittsburgh Platform was an official break with Orthodoxy, where I guess you could say, you know, and there are different courses about comparative religions. So my father's master's is in comparative religions. So when they compare other religions with Judaism, they have to compare it really with the Orthodox or maybe the conservative movement. But the Reform movement is considered, it's called in theology, Christianity without Yeshu. Because basically that's what Reform Judaism is. It's Christianity. Just like Yeshu, he saw a Jew doing the Tilat Yadayim and he said, God doesn't want you to have pure hands. He wants you to have a pure heart. And the Christians stopped putting on tefillin. They said that your hand represents your actions, the tefillin shel rosh represents your thoughts. And bikitzur, that's what Reform Judaism is. I'll just quote to you from the Pittsburgh Platform. This is official Reform decision from 1885. All rituals of Mosaic and rabbinic origin are completely foreign to contemporary society and civilization. In other words, the Reform people said that there is no heaven, no hell. There's no sacrifices. They took all of the mention of the korbanot out of the siddur. They took all mentions of Zion, of Yerushalayim, of Eretz Yisrael out of the siddur. A lot of people don't know. The Reform were anti-Zionist, because the whole idea of Reform Jewry was to be like the Americans, to assimilate. And everybody in America at the time was religious, and they didn't want to be Christian, so they were Reform. So they took out any mention of Zionism from the Siddur. Brit Milah, ironically, they continued doing. Although there was a difference of opinion, does a convert to Judaism have to do Brit Milah? So what did the Reform Jews do? if they didn't do any mitzvot and they didn't do any customs, what they did is they spoke about tikkun olam. You all know from Aleinu l'shabeach, l'taken olam b'malchut shaddai. We want to fix the world to be a better place. And Reform Jewry got very involved in the Democratic Party. If anybody knows the Democratic, the liberal aspect, the most far left-wing aspect of American politics, that's Obama, for example. His biggest supporters are Reform Jews. Ad kadei kach, I even saw that one Reform rabbi says today that Reform Jewry is like being a liberal member of the Democratic political party, that you're in favor of the Hispanics, you're in favor of abortion, you're in favor of one-parent gay marriages, you're in favor of everything. And so what did the Reform Jews do in America? They started building hospitals. You ever hear of Mount Sinai Hospital in New York? Very famous. It was built by Reform Jews. They built other different movements to help immigrants, which at the beginning, it was to help Jewish immigrants. Today, it's to help Hispanic and to help the minorities. It's not really very Jewish. And in fact, the turning point in Reform Jewry, this is we're talking at the beginning of the 20th century, was that some of the leading Reform rabbis decided to leave Reform Judaism because they said correctly, if you don't need God, by the way, in one survey, most of the Reform rabbis did not believe in God. So what do you need a reform? What do you need a movement for? What do you need a temple for? For example, the Rabbi Felix Adler, one of the leading Reform rabbis, he left Judaism to found the Ethical Culture Society. Anybody ever hear that one? Ethical Culture Society. It's still around today. It's almost all Jewish, where they get together once a week. They move Shabbat to Sunday. And they get together and pack Band-Aids and bandages for the Red Cross and, give out food to the poor people. And again, there is not under the auspices of Judaism anymore. Another rabbi, Rabbi Solomon Schindler, he left Reform Judaism to become a leader of the union, of the workers' union. Because if the whole idea is tikkun olam, to help people enjoy equal rights, so you could do it as a socialist in the labor movement. A third leading Reform rabbi, Rabbi Charles Fleischer, he joined the Unitarian Church. He became a Christian. In other words, it's important to know the background of the Reform movement, that it led very clearly to assimilation. And that was very, very tragic. And that was the situation until World War I. And thank God, Jews always have a good Jewish neshama. And when Jews see that other Jews are in danger or in trouble, they want to help. And in World War I, a lot of Jews were uprooted from their homes. And they had to run from Eastern Europe to Western Europe or from Europe to America. And you had all these refugees. And that is when the Reform movement began sort of coming back to Judaism. When Jews started making Aliyah as a result of World War I, as a result of the Nazis' rise to power, the Reform movement decided we have to help our Jewish brothers, and that is when they became Zionist. So most of you probably know that the Reform Jews, they participate in the Israeli Day Parade. They give money to Israel. All of that is the second Gilgul, the second stage of Reform Jewry. Whereas in 1937, they had what's called the Columbus Platform. And that basically changed the Pittsburgh Platform that we mentioned before, Whereas in the Pittsburgh platform in 1885, the Reformed Jews said, we don't want any traditions. We don't want any Mosaic commands anymore. And in 1937, in the Columbus platform, the Reform movement saw that we've gone too far. And that has been a constant movement to come back to Judaism. And that's a very important point, because if you see rabbinical literature against the Reform movement, from the Chatham Sofer, for example, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, Rav Soloveitchik in America, they are very, very anti-Reform, because Reform was in competition with the Orthodox. Girls, today, Reform is not in competition with the Orthodox. Today, most Jews in America are totally assimilated. And the Reform movement is Davka bringing them back to Judaism. And that's an important stage.
That's a sexy question.
Sure.
If you said that the shuls, the Reform shuls in the 1800s in Germany look like modern Orthodox shuls in America now, does that mean that eventually modern Orthodox shuls in America now are going to look like the Reform movement over time?
Molly, you ask a good question. I could answer you with a quote from Rav Avadia Yosef. You all heard of Rav Avadia Yosef, one of the leading poskim of the 20th century. Rav Avadia Yosef said that, with all due respect, to build yeshivas and to build shuls, batei knesset and chutz la'aretz, is like building a palace on ice. That it's just a matter of time before it melts. And nobody knows. Davka, there is a swing to the right in America, where modern Orthodox, I can tell you from my friends who didn't make Aliyah, my friends who stayed in America all had and have a very, very big dilemma, because the more Orthodox education is in the Haredi circles, in the more black hat circles. And if you want to raise your kids, I have one of my best friends from high school. He learned 2 years in Gush. He gives Gemara Shiurim, a very good guy. He stayed in America, and he sent his kids to Haredi yeshivot. And I asked him why. He said, because in America, there's no Merkaz Harav. There's no Hesder yeshivot. There's no, you know, Kipas Ruga movement. You know, even Bnei Akiva in America, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, compromises halachically. And you go to a modern Orthodox shul and you'll see, you know, unfortunately, many of the women don't cover their hair or cover their hair partially. And so nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going to be. You ask a good question.
A lot of the things that you're talking about, like their views on the world, are things that I like heard pretty on a common basis when I was in high school, like in a modern Orthodox high school. Like, people have a lot of the same issues with the traditions and like everything.
Like what? Can you give me an example?
Like they think, I can't really think of a specific example, but I remember like in Chumash class, one girl would like, she had this whole theory that, and it wasn't just one girl, because then it turns into like a debate with the whole class of like how the Avot were like bad people and like the Torah is just too old for like the times. And like this was like a pretty common conversation people would have, and like questions they would ask the teachers about how like Judaism just seems too old to like fit with modern times.
So what you're saying is, I went to school in the States in the 70s. And I haven't been there for a long time. But what you're describing is another reason, again, for the polarity, whereas a lot of, for the Jews staying in America, it's either you're going to go to the Haredi direction or you're going to go into the less religious, Orthodox. I'll give you another example that you people know better than I do, the issue of feminism in the Orthodox community. Right? You know what I'm talking about. Whereas I grew up in Riverdale, where that was the beginning of feminist orthodoxy, where the women, they just kept pushing the rabbis for more and more and more and more leniency. And somewhere along the line, every Orthodox rabbi has to say no. And then when they met up with that no, so some of them just went to the conservative movement. There are a lot of problems. That's one of the reasons why I left America. There are a lot of problems in American Orthodoxy where you see a certain amount of hypocrisy. I have a friend who's an Orthodox rabbi who told me he has a problem saying that homosexuality is wrong, is an abomination, like it says in the Torah, because it's not politically correct in America. And if this is even in an Orthodox shul, you know, that's a problem. And I don't know, is it that way in England also? Liora, Debbie, what would you say?
Can you repeat the question?
Is the issue, for example, of feminist orthodoxy in England, is that a very hot issue or not so much?
In different communities.
I
think it is.
Mm-hmm. So for example, in Israel, it's not an issue. You don't hear about women, you know, who want to have egalitarian minyanim, except for Anglo-Saxon olim. If anybody knows, there's a shul in, there are two shuls in Yerushalayim, where they're mostly Anglos, they're mostly English speakers, you know, who brought the American mindset to Israel. But these are big questions. And again, I don't know if who of you, Bezrat Hashem, are planning on making Aliyah. Here in Israel, you don't have to make that decision because there's a very serious religious Zionist kihilah. I mean, the people in Beit El or Kohav HaShachar, where I live, are no less religious than the people in Bnei Brak or Mea She'arim. In America, it's becoming, this is what I hear from my friends, it really is becoming either or. That you really have to, you know, make that decision. So, for example, the friend that I mentioned, I asked him, what, and it doesn't bother you that your kids don't celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut? And he says, it does bother me, but that was the choice that I had to make because the serious yeshivot in America, I had to send them to anti-Zionist yeshivas. Anyway, getting back to the Reform movement. So from 1937 on, by the way, just to give you an example, the fact of what Molly asked before, the fact that I had to use the year 1937 and not Tafresh Tzadi Zayin, that's a sign of assimilation within the modern Orthodox community in America. Do you all see that? If I would say Tafresh Tzadi Zayin, you probably wouldn't know what year I was talking about, right? When I teach Israelis, I just use the Hebrew date. When I teach Americans, part of being in America, you know, or Anglos, is that you go by the English date, even though you all know that the English date is counting from Yeshu, you know, from Christianity. But those are the dates that you people would know. Otherwise, we'd spend half the class on just on dates. Bekitzur, I had a student once who's put it very nicely about the Reform movement. She didn't say it about the Reform movement, she said about herself. This girl was a Bala Tshuva. And she said that she had a problem because there are a lot of things that she doesn't know and that she questions and that sometimes she sounds cynical. She says she is at a certain point in her religious development, but because she's a Balat Tshuva, her direction is up. And so she still has a lot of these questions. The teachers should not make the mistake that she is from birth and on her way down. Do you all see that? It's the same point. You all with me? And even though it's the same point, it's a totally, totally difference if you're on your way up or on your way down. For today, we have to relate to the Reform movement as thank God they're Reform, because if they weren't Reform, they'd not be doing anything. And Reform Jews today, they probably don't eat pork. They probably do brit milah. They might have a mezuzah on their door. And if they're intellectual and if they're serious, there's a good chance that they were their children, we can bring them back to Judaism. On the other hand, parenthetically, you have to remember that a lot of Reform Jews are not Jewish. It's already been 3-4 generations that intermarriage is unbelievable. The Reform define a Jew if their father is Jewish or their mother, which means that if it's been this way for 3 or 4 generations, that means there are a heck of a lot of Jews in America who are not halachically Jewish. Some say that it's even as high as 2 million out of the 5.5 million Jews in America. Some say that 2 million are not halachically Jewish. So I'm saying that before you spend a lot of time and effort to be Mekariv, a Jew who is Reform, you might, you know, want to make sure that they're Jewish. The same thing before you invite them for Shabbat and before you invite them to the Seder and have them pour your wine, there's a good chance that they're not Jewish. Usually what happens in intermarriage is that the Jewish man gets attracted to an attractive non-Jewish woman. And for their parents' sake, his parents' sake, she'll undergo a Reform conversion. And the kids simply are not Jewish. So that's another thing that you have to keep in mind. Any other questions? I have a question for you. This is the first time that I ever dealt with this issue. One of the girls asked me, I don't know who it was because you wrote the questions anonymously. Did this topic interest you or did it not interest you? Honestly.
I found it really interesting. I personally really enjoyed it.
Okay. Anybody else? But should I have to know whether it's a topic that might interest one person but not the others in the future? What do you say? Rachel?
Interesting.
We'll go one by one. Was it interesting? Interesting topic or not so much?
A little bit about other like sects of Judaism.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I thought it was nice to learn about like something other than what we are.
Uh-huh. Okay. Liara, did you find it interesting? Or not so much? Be honest. Yeah, like I said, I'm here to teach you that which interests you.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's just I don't know. It's maybe like not so relevant to us, but it's still important to understand about like other people.
Okay. Becca, what do you say?
Yeah, I agree with what Leora just said. I was thinking the same thing.
It's not too relevant.
But like it wasn't interesting and like you're doing to like know about other people and stuff like that. So
Okay, Devorah.
I thought it was very interesting, but on the same track as what Leora and Becca were saying, like I think that there are other things that we can learn that are more applicable to us.
Okay. Hold on, my battery's running out. There we go. So that's a good springboard to ask what would interest you to talk about in the last, we have I think 3 more shiurim left. What other topics would you like to discuss? Debbie, what do you have to say? You have any questions that you'd like to discuss?
I'm thinking.
Okay.
Have you got any options that we can, like, I don't know. Like, what were you thinking?
Sorry?
And then maybe, what were you thinking? And then maybe we can...
I don't know. Lola. Lola, you have any ideas? No? Molly,